I feel like I'm hiding when I'm behind that. I am grateful for your smiles. I am grateful for your presence. Hopefully you'll be grateful for your presence when it's all over tonight. I was grateful for the thoughts that our brother Alvin brought this morning, and he mentioned the fact that he didn't want to read the normal scriptures that are often given at a time like this on Father's Day, and I am going to talk about fathers today, or this evening. Primarily, what are the responsibilities of a father? And when I say that, I have to be honest with you, I was a bit shocked to read some of the things that I read to myself, and I'll read some of them to you tonight. But I'll begin in Ephesians in the 4th chapter, and of course everyone's sitting here saying, oh, I know what he's going to read, and you're right. Pardon me, the 4th chapter. I'll get it correct after a minute. It is the 6th chapter and the 4th verse. I was close. And it goes like this, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And as I read that, I noticed that the word nurture in my book had a little number 1 beside it, and wondered what that was possibly translated in another way, and the word was training. And so it's telling me that we're to bring up, train our children, admonish them of the Lord. And I wondered how all that fit together. What was he trying to tell me? Because you find in the New Testament lots of times that what is said is kind of it's like a pill, it's a capsule of information. And if you go back to the Old Testament, you find the answers to some of those things. And that's what I did this time. And I went back to Deuteronomy as soon as I can find it. And it's the 6th chapter there. And the first time I wrote this is going to be the way the sermon goes tonight. You know, the first time I looked at these things, I wrote down just a very few verses. And I went back and I reread them and I said, that's not enough, you know. So now I've doubled the number of verses. So I'll begin with verse 8:1 and read down through at least 18. It says, now, these are the commandments and the statutes and the judgments that the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land whither you go to possess it. And of course, you understand very quickly that he was speaking to the house of Israel during that period of time when they were in the wilderness and you might say waiting out those 40 years before they were allowed to enter the promised land. And there were a number of things that took place along the way. One of them was when he went into the Mount Oreb and there he received the Ten Commandments. And quite frankly, although we say that the Mosaic Law is done away, when you look at the New Testament that we have, those old laws did not change. They're still the same. But instead of them being something that was physical, it became a law that was written on your heart. And the reason that they were to teach these things, that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou and thy sons' sons, all the days of thy life, that thy days may be prolonged. And you'll remember our brother Alvin mentioned this morning that, you know, if you obey your parents, that your days would be long upon the earth. And there again, the same promise. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, that ye may increase mightily as the Lord God of thy fathers hath promised thee in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I have commanded thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as a frontlet between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. You know, that's quite a few places to place those things so that they're always in front of us, that we remember what he told us to do. And I think that in our day, we have, as a nation at least, and be honest with you, as a world, we've been successful at placing all those things, you might say, under the seat. They're out of sight. We can't see them anymore. We don't want to have to obey them. And that has become very troubling to me, and it seems more so every day. He goes on to, you notice there that he said that they were to teach their children these things. And it occurs to me that Moses was primarily, through Aaron, speaking to the men of the house of Israel. That was their responsibility. Teach these things to your children. Now, you know, I know that you can go to the Book of Mormon and read there where those 2,000 young stripling soldiers said that, you know, our mothers told us that we were to believe. And quite honestly, if their fathers were doing what they were supposed to, then the teachings of their mother was a snap, you know. If you have the evidence of something, then it's easy to believe and have faith in those things which have been spoken of. Quite frankly, us fathers and us husbands, that is our responsibility, to teach these things to our children. And one of the ways we do that is in the way we live our lives. And it shall be when thou, Lord, when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou filledest not, and wells digged which thou diggedest not, vineyards and olive trees that thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full. Then beware, lest thou forget the Lord, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God, and serve him, and shalt swear by his name. Ye shall not go after other gods, or the gods of the people which are around about you. For the Lord thy God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against thee, and destroy thee from off the face of the earth. Ye shall not tempt the Lord your God as ye tempted him in Massah. Ye shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God, and his testimonies and his statutes which he hath commanded thee. And thou shalt do that which is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest go in and possess the good land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers. And he goes on to tell them that he had cast out their enemies and so forth. You know, it almost parallels the things that took place in this land. Many of our forefathers were, you might say, were ousted from Europe because they couldn't pay their debts. Some of them were criminals, you know, that send them to America, let them die there in the desert, you know. That was the attitude. And yet, at one time, we became the greatest nation on the earth. And I fear lest those days are past. And they are past for sure, unless this nation changes. We cannot look upon those things that are sin and say, well, it's, you know, it's an alternate way of life. We cannot stand idly by and do nothing. And yet, it seems as though our hands are tied, because if you don't speak politically correct, you're shouted down, unable to be heard. I thought it was interesting also that Moses did not just speak those things one time, because all you have to do is move over a few chapters to chapter 11. And there again, I'll begin with the first verse. He says, "Therefore thou shalt love the Lord thy God and keep his charge and his statutes and his judgments and his commandments always. And know ye this day, for I speak not with your children, which have not known, and which have not seen the chastisement of the Lord your God, his greatness, his mighty hand, and his strength of out and his stretched out arm." Now, it doesn't take too many generations for people to forget the things that have happened, particularly when you rewrite your history. You know, no one remembers the fact that our very first president was a military man, and that he went into battle and they found bullet holes in his shirts and in his hat that never penetrated his body. You don't hear those things in history anymore. We have forgotten our God. And it is up to us fathers to teach our children these things, that they may know that there is a God and that he keeps his word, and it is wisdom when we keep ours. And his stretched out arm and his miracles and his acts which he did in the midst of Egypt unto Pharaoh the king of Egypt and unto all his land. And what he did unto the army of Egypt and to their horses and to their chariots, how he made the water of the Red Sea overflow them as they pursued after you, and how the Lord hath destroyed them unto this day. Never again was Egypt that great power. And what he did unto you in the wilderness until you came into this place, and what he did unto Dathan and Abiram and the son of Eliab and the son of Reub, how the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up and their households and their tents and all the substance that was in their possession in the midst of all Israel. But your eyes have seen all the great acts of the Lord which he did. He said, you have seen these things. Remind your children of what took place, so they will have that ability to have faith in God. Therefore, shall you keep all the commandments which I command you this day, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land whither you go to possess it, and that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give unto them and to their seed, a land that floweth with milk and honey, not unlike our land. You can't find another place on this earth that produces more soil that's richer. It doesn't exist. For the land whither thou goest in to possess it, it is not as the land of Egypt from whence you came out, where thou sowedest thy seed and waterest it with thy foot as a garden of herbs. Now, they had to, shall we use the word, irrigate it? But the land whither ye go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven, a land which the Lord thy God careth for. The eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it, from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year. And it shall come to pass, if ye shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your mind, all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in its due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thy oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that they may eat and be full. Take heed to yourselves, that your hearts be not deceived, and ye turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heavens, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, and lest ye perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. Therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your hearts and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets before your eyes, and ye shall teach them your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land which the Lord shall swear unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. For if you shall diligently keep all these commandments which I command you to do, them to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to cleave unto him, then will the Lord drive out all these nations from before you, and ye shall possess greater nations, mightier than yourselves. Every place whereon the soles of thy foot shall tread shall be yours, from the wilderness of Lebanon, from the river and the river Euphrates, even unto the uttermost sea shall your coast be. There shall no man be able to stand before you, for the Lord your God shall lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that ye shall tread upon, as he hath said unto you. Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. A blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you this day, and a curse if you will not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside out of the way which I command you this day, go after other gods which ye have not known. You know, some would say, well, that task today is even more difficult than it was in former years, but I'm not so sure that that's true, because I don't care what period of time we have been in, there's always been temptation placed before us. There's always been difficulties to have to overcome. There has always been Satan's ability to torment us, to lure us away with the lust of the flesh and all those things that can draw us away from our Heavenly Father. As I read there, you'll recall that he told them to tell them the things that took place. You know, to remind them of the fact that they crossed the Red Sea without so much as a mud puddle, that they were guided by a pillar of light during the day, that there was a cloud, pardon me, I got it backwards, but a cloud by day that guided them, and a pillar of light by night. That, as he mentioned here, when they were disobedient, when those families decided that they wanted to question the things that God was giving Moses to give to them, that he destroyed them. He opened the earth and swallowed them. And we want to say, oh, that can't happen today. I can't give you the year, because it seems to me like it's 76, but I may be wrong. I remember reading an article about an event that took place in Alaska. It's a, you know, to you and I, for the most part, Alaska is just a place way up north. You know, we can't hardly relate to it. It's a massive land. It's a beautiful land. It's full of all kinds of promise. It's also a very cold and unforgiving land. And there was a terrible earthquake. And it shook the ground so hard that you could not stand. And in this article, the man tells how he crawled from his house, trying to get to the street in hopes that it would be more substantial. And his wife was right behind him, crawling on the ground, trying to maneuver across. And the ground was shaking so hard that they couldn't hardly crawl, let alone walk. And he looked back, and she was gone. The earth can open up and swallow those who are not obedient. I'm not saying she wasn't obedient. That's not what I'm trying to say. But our God is so powerful that he is in control of all these things. And he will use it to teach us a lesson. Some of the things that we were commanded, you know, you could go and read in Matthew there, the Sermon on the Mount, and you get a tremendous amount of information that tells you how we're to live, what we're to be, how we should respond to one another. And it's always in kindness and being gentle and caring and yet obedient to that God who gave his life. But I have chosen to go back to Ephesians for a moment. I don't know if that was wise or not, but that's what I chose to do. Fourth chapter of Ephesians 1 through 8. Paul was quite aware of his circumstances because of the fact that he was struck down upon the way and given a vision and knew exactly what he was to do in his life from that point on. In a way, he considered himself like a prisoner. He had no choice but to do what he was doing because he now had the truth. And in a sense, you and I are in that same position. We have the truth. And so in a sense, we are prisoners to that truth. And we must obey or have the consequences follow us. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherein you are called. We are called to be righteous. We are called to teach our children those things that they have not perhaps even considered. With all lowliness and meekness and with longsuffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, even as ye are called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. Now you're going to say, well, now, God's not inside of me. I'm just me. Well, there is that place that tells us that we will serve one master or the other, and you can't serve both at the same time. And so which one are you allowing to be within you and to guide you and to direct the things that you do in your life? But unto every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ. He has given us that opportunity to feel his love, to understand his willingness to protect us when we can't protect ourselves. Wherefore he saith, when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts unto men. And what was that gift that he gave us? He gave us that gift to have an eternal life if we will just keep his commandments. He gave us the apostles and he gave us the evangelists and the prophets and all those and pastors and teachers to help guide us. For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in unity of faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, and a perfect man unto the measure of the statutes of the fullness of Christ. Now we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro. You know, you can't just, oh, well, that sounds good. I think I'll live by that principle. Oh, that one over here is better. What is it? What is written here? What will you let guide your life? It's in your scriptures. Then we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. But speak the truth in love. And I hope that I'm doing that tonight. I don't mean to be coming down on people like a ton of bricks. And yet, I feel like that too many times we, pardon the phrase, but we kind of, like the little cat, where we pussyfoot around those things which are difficult for people to accept because of the current political correctness of speech that we seem to think that we have to abide by. But speaking the truth in love may grow up unto him in all things which is ahead, even Christ, for whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth according to the effectual workings in the measure of every part maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. This I say therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk no more as other Gentiles walk in the vanity of your mind, and having the understanding darkened, being aligned, alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their hearts. You know, the world today will tell you, ask your children what they would like to do. And you want to play baseball today? Let's go play baseball. It's Sunday, but you know, it's 11 o'clock, but no big deal. You know, we can go to church next Sunday. That's okay. Oh, you want to go to the lake? Let's go to the lake. You know, the water's cooler than, I mean, it's 95 degrees out there, and you know, and it makes the sweat run off your brow. What is most important? Your soul's welfare or just a good time today? And yet that's what I'm seeing. And it's not just out there in the world anymore. You know, it's everywhere you look. Now, I would invite you to continue on through chapter 4 and through chapter 5 and to read all those things, because they give you a direction that your life needs to go. And it's a direction that we need to be teaching our children, so that when their day of decision comes, they'll have the tools to work with. There's also in Proverbs a little phrase that I want us to try to instill within our children. It's found in Proverbs 6. Some of you will know exactly what I'm going to read. Start with the 16th verse. There's the things that we're to do, and they're mentioned in Matthew, like I said, in the Beatitudes, how we're to be, what we're to do. And there's some things that we're to definitely stay away from. And they're written here. It says, these six things, starting with the 16th verse of the 6th chapter of Proverbs. These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, even are an abomination unto him, a proud look. You can say, well, what's wrong with the way I look? No. There can be a lot goes with, because it tells you the attitude. A lying tongue and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief. You know, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. My son, keep thy father's commandments, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continual upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou wakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproof of instruction are the way of life. You know, I have to be caught up short frequently because there's always those things in life that cause you grief, I guess you would say. You know, I happen to like to play like I'm farming, and so I have the machinery to do that with, except that it's old and it breaks down, and when it breaks down, it's frustrating, and you would like to take a hammer and beat it to pieces, but that isn't what God called you to do, is it? He called us to keep control of our temper. He called us to look at those events and say, well, what am I to learn from this tonight? Okay, it's hot out here, but what am I to learn from these things besides patience? And sometimes that's a difficult lesson. And yet it's one that we must teach our children. You know, how many times have you seen them dancing up and down, but I want my way, you know? And in some ways, us as adults, we're no different. We want our way. But our way needs to be the way of our God. He told the house of Israel to remind their children and their children's children, he called them sons, of the things that took place, and I rehearsed a few of those. The Red Sea that opened up, it made it possible for them to cross on dry land. The fact that that they were even liberated from Egypt. And all of these things were miracles that took place. You know, the plagues that took place in Egypt weren't natural events. They were things that God caused to take place. And as quickly as they came, they disappeared. You know, the plague of locusts, you know, I forget now, what was it, 7 days or something? They were there, and then they were gone. That's not nature's way. They'd been there all summer long if it was nature's way. But I jotted down a few things that came across my mind that someone say, well, those are miracles that have taken place recently, and in fact, it's true. But how did those miracles come about? Why did they happen? What was their purpose? You know, there's a brother that we don't often get to see here, and yet I heard him talking to a group the other night, and he told us that in his line of work, he knows that God is there. Pardon me. And he knows that when he walks out that door of his home, that God is going to watch over him. And he says, because of what he has done in the past. You see, he one night had the hair of his head burnt right off here because of a gun that went off right here. But the round never penetrated. It lodged in the barrel. Another night when he went to deliver a subpoena to somebody, he was welcomed with a shotgun blast. Holes clear through all of his clothing and his shirt, but they didn't go through his body. That doesn't happen by chance. I've told you some of these before, but I'll rehearse them again. Because it told them there that they were to remind their children of these things when they sat down at night, when they went to bed, when they got up in the morning, to repeat them often. And I never will forget the day that I seen a sister walk into the old church building. Actually, she didn't walk. She was carried in. And she was administered to. And when they got through administering to her, she stood up on her feet. And walked to her seat. And she walked from that day on. She didn't have a need for a cane. She didn't have a need for a walker. How did it happen? Because of her faith. Because of her willingness to serve her God. You know, we have a number in our midst that have had cancer. And yet, God saw fit to heal them. And it doesn't return. You know, the world says, well, you know, if you've lived 5 years without that cancer, you're not cancer-free, but you're a survivor. And yet, some of these have been with us for many years. Some of these things I did not witness myself, but I believe those who have taught it to me or told me of them. You know, I have an aunt who who worked in Nebraska as a young lady teaching school in a one-room schoolhouse. And she was warned, don't go home late at night. Get there before it gets dark. Well, one night she forgot. And as she began her walk home in the darkness, she could hear the mountain lion screaming very close by. And they were having trouble with this critter because he had killed a number of livestock, and they were concerned for their children as well as her. That's the reason why they had warned her. And she became very frightened, but she knew that she dare not run because that's only an invitation for the creature to attack. And her prayer was that God would protect her. And as she walked along the path, she felt something furry under her hand and wondered what it might be, because that's, you know, your hand's pretty tall. You know, is this a wolf? What is it? But she was afraid to look down. And she got to her cabin and quickly went in and closed the door. And the next morning she opened it because she became curious. What kind of a creature was that was beside me? Was that the mountain lion beside me? The footprints went only a pace or two away from the door and they ended. A miracle for a purpose. That we might know that God is in control. That we might know that He loves His children. But He does expect obedience. I have a cousin that, you know, probably was as rambunctious as any young lad ever thought of being. And you know how it is. Sometimes you're up in the top bunk of the bed and you fall out, you know, because you're not paying attention. And he landed on a toy, a heavy metal toy, and it punctured right through his temple. And you can imagine what took place. And on their way to the hospital, his father was driving as fast as that little Studebaker would go. But it was insufficient. And the lad passed. His mother knew that he was gone because he began to turn about as gray as his DA shirt there. And she begged the Lord. For his life. Presently, the pink came back to his face just like Aubrey's sweater there. And got him to the hospital, and the doctors, you know, they did their little antiseptic thing and put a bandage over the hole and said, well, we'll have to wait and see what happens. And they kept him there for a day or two, and all he wanted to do was play. Accident? Coincidence? No. Again, our God loves His children. I haven't asked permission to use these names, but I'm sure it's okay, or at least I pray it is. You know, Savannah's with us tonight. And yet all those that had cancer at the same time she did are gone. Now there's two little children. Saving miracles of our God. You know, it wasn't so many years ago that, and I don't know exactly where it was at, but our brother AJ was traveling and he was trying to do his job as best he knew how, and he was multitasking along the way, trying to take care of his phone and drive and get directions and all that at the same time, and that doesn't work too well. And he ended up in a terrible accident. And I remember us being called and asked to pray that they weren't sure he was going to make it. But he's here with us tonight. I also recall the Sunday morning when I got a call from my brother Sean. He says, "Jim, I need two elders." Well, I'm the only one here. And I said, "Where do they need to go?" And he told me. And so I told him I'd send the first two that came through the door. And it just happens. It wasn't that they were anything special other than that they have a calling from God and a responsibility to fulfill it. And it just happened that morning. And I still to this day don't know why they were here. But two of our apostles appeared through the door. And I said, "Brothers, this is unusual for me to be asking you to do something, but our brother Sean has asked for two elders to come to minister to his wife. And I don't know how serious things are, but he sounds pretty upset." You know, they turned to their wives and said, "You go on in. We're going. Where is it we're supposed to go?" And they were gone. And consequently, our sister Angelita is still here with us. You know, my whole family is, in a sense, is a miracle. Bonnie should have probably passed away when she was about, 6 years old? When Glenn backed over you? She was 2 years old. And Glenn had been a very responsible young man, had asked his mother, "Where are the girls at?" And she said, "Oh, they're in the front yard playing, don't worry." And he got in his car and started to back up and he felt something. And he stopped. And the wheel's right here. It doesn't end there because she has an older sister that's 20 years older. And she saw this from the upstairs window and ran down and grabbed this car and picked it up. Well, they pulled her out. She couldn't even extend the shocks on that car later. And you want to say she picked that car up? She made the effort. But God picked it up. I probably shouldn't be standing here tonight either, because I recall that at about age 13 or thereabouts, we were on a young people's activity probably doing something we shouldn't have been doing on a Sunday afternoon, but we were swimming. No, it might have been Saturday afternoon. I can't remember. And I undertook to swim across a little cove with my close friend Randy. And about halfway across, my feet became lead weights. And they went down, and my head went with them. I came up three times. And thinking, well, I wonder what it's going to feel like to die. And I wasn't afraid for some reason, but just wonder what it's going to feel like. When I felt someone grab me by the shoulders and pull me out, a young man that I had never met, I think I told him, thank you. I don't remember. I hope I did. These are the things that we should teach our children about, talk to them about them, show them that God does what he promises. His examples are all around us. I'm kind of like Brother Alvin, and it's not on purpose, but I've only got one reference from the Book of Mormon. You know, I probably could go on longer with a lot more of those events that took place in our lives that each one of you probably have a list of your own, and when you think about it, of those things that God has done that were not just accidents or a stroke of luck. There's no such thing. Either he does it or he doesn't. But in Mosiah, the second chapter, I'll begin with the 20th verse. And this is not the part that most often is read. It says, "But even so, I would that you should remember and always retain in remembrance the greatness of God and your own nothingness and his goodness and longsuffering towards you unworthy creatures. And humble yourselves even in the depths of humility, calling on the name of the Lord daily, standing steadfastly in the faith of that which is to come, which was spoken by the mouth of the angel. And behold, I say unto you that if you do this, you shall always rejoice and be filled with the love of God, and also retain a remission of your sins. And you shall grow in the knowledge of the glory of him that created you, or in the knowledge of that which is just and true. You grow in that knowledge by being in his word, by listening to his voice, by honoring him with your life. You shall not have a mind to injure one another, but to live peaceably and to render to every man according to that which is his due. And you will not suffer your children to go hungry or naked. And you will not suffer your children that they go, neither will you suffer that they transgress the laws of God and fight and quarrel one with another." You know, how well I remember being at that age and being instructed frequently about those kinds of things. You can't do that, Jim. You know, you're to take care of your brother, not beat him up. "And serve the devil, which is a master of sin, or which is the evil spirit which has been spoken by our fathers, he being an enemy to all righteousness. But you will teach them to walk in the ways of truth and soberness, and you will teach them to love one another and to serve one another. And also you yourselves will succor those that stand in need of your succor. And you will administer of your substance to him that stands in need." He gives us a way of life, and It's a way of life that brings joy when we permit it. I will close with a psalm that caught my interest, shall I say. It's a 78th psalm. I'll only read a portion of it, verses 1 to 7. "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable, and I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength. The things that I just told you about, that's his strength. He has the greatest power upon this earth. There is none greater because he created it all. I lost my place. We will not hide them from their children, showing to generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he establishes testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know of them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and a rebellious generation, a generation that set not their hearts aright, and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. You know, you might look upon our generation as being that, but we can change that by instilling within our children those principles that they can live by, that will bring them joy, that will turn the tide of the events that are currently going on. And it is up to us fathers to teach these things. That when our mothers speak of faith, they'll have no trouble believing. God bless each one of you in the task that lays ahead.